And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you back to another episode of the podcast here previewing the Ohio game this weekend.
All right, Ryan. So obviously everybody is focused still on the offensive side of the ball, and probably rightfully so, right? They haven't had a chance to really showcase anything real consistently or get anything going on offense. And part of that is due to injury. So let's focus on injuries and start with the offensive side of the ball right now. What do we have in store this week on the old injury report?
Luke, let me tell you, this injury report is getting extremely long, and it's not good. It is not good. So Kill was on with KFAN earlier this afternoon, and news came out that offensive tackle Ben Lauer, who had been dealing with some knee issues and had been playing sporadically here the last two games, broke his hand yesterday in practice, so that's always good. And now he's questionable for Ohio. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if Ben Lauer, working off basically one good knee and a broken hand, would be able to play even adequately against a team like Ohio. So he's probably out. It was also came out that Demaryius Travis is out again for the third consecutive game. Kiel finally went a little bit more public on what his injury was. He popped his hamstring at the end of the game against TCU. So he's been out Colorado State, Kent State, and will be out again this weekend. I would expect him back for Northwestern. I was talking with a source earlier this week who told me that he'd be surprised if Demaryius couldn't go against Ohio this weekend, and I'm guessing that this is just more of a precautionary tale, trying to make sure that Minnesota's as close to healthy as they can get in that secondary group for the Big Ten opener against Northwestern, which is actually shaping up to be a huge game for both teams. So Demaryius will be out. I would be shocked if Ben Lauer wasn't out. It also came out that Kunle Ayinde, the Gopher starting safety last week in replace of Demaryius Travis, is questionable. But again, Ace Rogers, who had a knee injury and missed Colorado State and Kent State, is going to be back. So that's going to be nice for Minnesota. And it's also expected that tight end Brandon Lingen, the Gopher starting tight end, is expected back as well. So, I mean, this offensive line, though, Luke, they can't catch a break.
No.
I mean, I was detailing this on Gopher Digest earlier today when I was looking at the offensive tackles. Five of the seven tackles, five of the seven or eight tackles are injured. Jonah Persig,
yeah,
he's dealing with a shoulder injury, and he missed time last week. Josh Campion, he missed TC with a concussion. Ben Lauer's got a broken hand and knee issues. Alex Mays hasn't dressed yet this season with an unknown injury. Nick Connolly, who is one of three freshmen who have been getting increased snaps in practice because of all these injuries, he's now out with a concussion. And then you have Quinn Osland, Foster Bush, and Luke Rasmussen for your only only healthy guys. It is a banged-up group.
Yeah, and definitely that's kind of been evident in their play, right, especially early this season. And there's not a lot of chance to get, that early continuity in the season. They've really struggled. Some in pass protection, running the ball hasn't been it hasn't taken that step you maybe would have expected this season with a little bit more veteran offensive line group.
Yeah, definitely hasn't been as effective as they wanted it to be, especially the last game against Kent State. But I'm not making any excuses for these offensive linemen, and I they're a very prideful group. And Kill and Lime Grover have come out and said it these past 48 hours. It's a very prideful group, and they're trying to simplify things on the offense and the offensive line specifically. And hopefully that's the key this weekend. But again, especially with all these injuries, Joe Bjorklund, Kill said earlier this week that he's only able to practice once a week now. Kill already said earlier in August that he was going to burn Tyler Moore's red shirt. Okay, so I don't understand why it's a big deal that if you start him at left guard and give Joe Bjorklund and Ben Lauer at least a game off to try to get them healthy for the Big Ten season.
Right.
I think Tyler is definitely more than adequate to, and understand he's a true freshman, but So those fans who think this offensive line needs a little bit of a nasty to it, well, meet Tyler Moore, because this man is nasty. He is, I mean, he's a fit. He's the guy who, if you wanted to be the protege to a Zach Epping type, here he is. And I don't see any, I mean, he's a guy who's been here since January. He played at guard all of January. He played at guard for the beginning of fall camp, and then he was transitioning to center to try to be the backup to Brian Bobeck. But with Christensen out and Bjorklund hurt, Tyler Moore, it hasn't become public yet, and we're going to find out here later tonight after we get done recording the podcast when the depth chart comes out. But I would definitely not be shocked at all to see Tyler Moore starting against Ohio. And I would be one who's actually advocating for it because of all these injuries. So this offensive line needs to start building some continuity, but it's tough with all these injuries. But you just have to play Tyler Moore in my eyes. So this Gopher squad really didn't sustain too many injuries last week. Kunle, who is questionable for the game, is the only one of note. Nick Conley, who is basically trying to become like the fourth or fifth tackle to try and build some depth, he's out with a concussion. So if one of these tackles goes down in Persig or in Campion, I would guess Foster Bush would be your swing tackle at either left or right. But if somehow he goes down, it's Quinn Osland, another redshirt burn. But we'll see what happens come Saturday.
Yeah, another group that's been decimated by injury that we've talked about a lot is that tight ends group, right? It's definitely going to be nice to have Brandon Lingan back in the lineup, you know, coming off of the injury at Colorado State. He will be nice to have back in that lineup. But again, this is a group, you know, really playing with down probably their two top tight ends, arguably. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Duke, but we do know what we had in Lincoln Plezic, but definitely another group that's been decimated by injury that definitely doesn't help the running game.
Yeah, getting Brandon Lingan back this week is arguably probably the most crucial part of injury-wise getting back. There's so much depth in the defensive backfield that, you know, Ace Rogers, a JUCO All-American that Minnesota brought in this year, is definitely going to help. But, again, the defensive backs are so strong that this offense needs some help. And I think Brandon Lingan, who is, I think, coming into this after the first 2 weeks of fall camp, I thought he was the best overall tight end that Minnesota had. So gaining a guy back like Brandon Lingan and putting him with Nate Wozniak instead of, you know, playing two walk-ons and Nick Hart and Noah Scarver, nothing against them, but Brandon is a guy who played as a true freshman last year, and he was someone who I thought took a step forward from his play last year. So getting him back is going to be really nice, especially in this run game, because I didn't think the tight ends played very well last week in the run part of it. I think they were on skates too much, too far in the backfield. And they're so huge to setting an edge for a runner like Rodney Smith, who likes to, you know, if he doesn't see anything on the interior of the offensive line, he's proven through the first three games that he's not afraid to bump it outside. And if, you know, they run a stretch play or something, I have trust that Brandon Lingan can seal that 7 technique or that 9 technique or the outside blacker flowing that way. So I think this is good news for Rodney Smith, absolutely, in this running game. So hopefully that shows on, you know, hopefully it shows on Saturday and this offense can put up some more points.
All right, let's transition and talk a little bit of recruiting, Ryan. You know, recruiting really never stops in collegiate football. Well, in college sports in general, it really never stops. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the recruiting game, you know, official visitors and offers and that kind of thing for this week.
Hey, Minnesota's got an official visitor. Huh? I mean, that gets me going a little bit.
This is the first one this year, right? Or at least this season since actual football started.
Yeah, this is the first official visitor since the football season started. And so Minnesota will be having in Florida linebacker, specifically Fort Myers linebacker, Andre Polk. Polk is somebody that I know that this defensive staff holds in a very high regard, obviously, as they're trying to get him on campus as soon as they could. I believe Polk is a bye week this coming Friday, and so it fits perfectly into his schedule, and he's very excited to visit up here. So fans probably want to know, what are they getting in Andre Polk? They already have Carter Coughlin, Thomas Barber, potentially Kamal Martin, all three local kids. So what does the Florida kid bring? Well, Polk is a big kid, 6'3", 215, and he's someone that both Tracy Clays and Mike Sherrills went and saw in the springtime when the coach was going to hit the road, and they both came away very impressed by Polk. And he's definitely someone that I would say he's arguably the top linebacking target remaining on the board. There's very little names on that list. I can think of probably two or three off the top of my head. And Andre is definitely near the top. He's a very rangy, athletic linebacker that loves contact. He's someone that I think would probably benefit from a redshirt year, but he's definitely got the athletic ability to play right away. Hopefully this linebacking core, which is already six deep, and especially when you bring in a guy like Carter Coughlin, who is definitely going to play right away next year in my mind. So he can benefit from a redshirt year, but Polk has other offers from Louisville, among others. So Minnesota's proven in the past that they're not afraid of whatever the offer list is, no matter how big or how small, how many stars he has or whatnot. I think they're starting to prove that if they offer a guy, he's someone that a recruiting service, I wouldn't call Scout a recruiting service, but a recruiting site like Scout really needs to take notice of and watch their film a little bit more closely and see what they have going on about him. Because, you know, how many guys in this defense especially are going to be NFL guys? I mean, you look at a Jalen Myrick who had Middle Tennessee coming out, bringing by Calhoun, no one, Eric Murray, Jack Lynn, Cody Polk. I mean, George Julian Huff, basically the star freshman of this class so far, with his just burst off the edge. So Andre Polk is a guy that will be visiting this weekend. He'll be up here Friday, stay through Sunday. He's told me that, you know, he doesn't want to make a decision right away, but I can tell you that Minnesota would love it if he gets in the fold sooner rather than later.
All right, let's talk a little bit about offers. It seems like it's been a while since there's been a lot talked about new guys that have been offered. We do know that it is pretty typical for a kill staff to wait to get some senior film on guys, and even particularly junior film. They like to see some of that rather than being one of these teams that offers, you know, the 7th and 8th graders. So what do we have in terms of offers that have gone out recently?
Yeah, again, it's so exciting to me. I get so jacked up about recruiting. This is the first time, I think, in 4 to 6 weeks that Minnesota's extended an offer. I legitimately think that. So Minnesota had two new offers go out this week. They had one go out to Chicago defensive end Amir Watts, and they had one go out to Georgia, specifically Savannah athlete Akeem Bird. Then that was extended on Tuesday night. So Amir Watt has a bunch of different Big Ten options, I should say. And this is the first defensive line offer that's gone out in quite a while. Defensive line specifically is a spot that I think Minnesota is really waiting to see senior film. They have a bunch of guys that they've been keeping their eye on for the last 4 weeks as these seniors start to play some game film. And as they get to compare them against one another, they finally start to develop a list of, you know, who are the top four guys that we like here. Okay, what's the tier after them and the tier after them? So Amir is a kid from Phillips Academy in Chicago. He's a defensive end, defensive tackle type. He's 6'3", 270 pounds. He's got a bunch of other offers from places like Pittsburgh, Rutgers, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois. So he's got Big Ten offers. And from talking with Amir a little bit, he immediately put the Gophers in his top five after the offer, and he's planning an official visit here, although no date is set. So definitely good news that Minnesota has another defensive lineman that's taking serious interest in them. Akeem Bird is a definite, I wouldn't call him a sleeper, because he's someone that the Gopher staff really got their eye on after Akeem camped at Georgia. So when he was at the Georgia camp, he measured in at 6'1", 194 pounds. He ran a 4.46, a 10'2" broad jump, and a 41-inch vertical.
I want to see that 41 foot vertical. That sounds really impressive.
Yeah, Mr. Superman, we'd start calling him. But he's a guy who's an athletic freak, and if you watch his film, he's an extremely physical player. From talking with Bird earlier today, Jerry Kill and Rob Reeves, his recruiting coach down there in Georgia, are the ones that extended the offer. And the offer is at either running back or defensive back. So he's a very versatile player. he's someone I think fans should keep an eye on, as he wants to visit Minnesota to make a decision. Pretty straightforward. He also knows Jalen Myrick, who is from the same town of Savannah there. They've talked a little bit about Minnesota. They've trained with some of the same coaches. So two guys that are showing immediate Minnesota interest, which is very good, and especially at positions of need at defensive line and running back / defensive back, where Minnesota is going to be taking guys here going forward. Definitely some people to watch. All right, so we are now joined with one of the elite Ohio football minds in all of America, in beat reporter Charlie Hatch. He's from The Post out there in Athens, Ohio. So, Charlie, how you doing?
I'm good. I wouldn't say elite.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's too many people out there that know more about the Ohio Bobcat football team than you do. So there's a lot of high expectations we have for the short time that we have you here. So let's get rolling. So the first question I have for you, Charlie, is obviously Gopher fans know that Ohio is 3-0 so far in the 2015 season here, including an impressive home win over, Marshall earlier this year, who also took care of Purdue. So Ohio is definitely no slouch. So what has been the keys to the Bobcats' undefeated start here in the 2015 season?
Well, it's kind of been a mix of things. I think one of the biggest noticeable differences between the 2014 and 15 season is that they like to get off to these quick leads, and then they don't exactly build on the lead, but they can hold on to it. So, like the first game they played against Idaho, they went up 21-0 midway through the first quarter. And I think the final score was like 45-28 or something like that. But it's basically, you know, we already have this lead, and then any time a team tried to get close, they would move up. And against Marshall, it was the exact same thing. They went up. Marshall ended up tying it, but then Ohio started pulling away. And then even against, you know, Southeastern Louisiana, an FCS school who they beat last week, they did the same thing going up 21-0. So I don't know if they've necessarily done anything that's been overly impressive, but they've been able to get out to a nice lead quickly, and they haven't been trailing in any games.
Let's talk about that offense a little bit. Obviously, you're saying they're getting off to early, quick leads. What can a Gopher fans expect out of the Ohio offense?
I think, to tell you the truth, I don't know if anyone knows what to expect. They like to adapt on the fly. I mean, going into the season, they wanted to run two quarterbacks with Darius Vick and then J.D. Sprague. And J.D. Sprague got hurt against Marshall, so then there were talks, and Darius Vick got hurt against Marshall, so there were talks about having to play the 3 and 4 fourth-string quarterbacks. That didn't work out. Vic has been good to go. He had a career high last week. So I guess they're willing to throw the ball, but Ohio, if it can, I mean, establishing the run is the big thing. Coach Frank Solich is a bit of an old school guy, so he likes to get the ball on the ground and build up the running game. And then if that works out, maybe try some play action and throw it in the air.
Okay, and when I was looking through the Ohio, you know, football statistics so far this season, one guy that popped out at me was wide receiver Brendan Cope. He's a guy that's averaging over 25 yards a catch so far this season. So how much of a weapon has he been for these Ohio quarterbacks?
Yeah, he's been a person to go to. He actually, I think the first offensive play was a 30-yard pass over the middle to him. It's not like he's, you know, having these, it may be a screen play and then he goes 30 yards for after the catch, but it's something that he finds his way over the middle. Ohio is willing to play the ball and throw it vertically. And that's how he's set up nicely. And I think they try to do the same with Sebastian Smith, but he doesn't. I think because he's the number one, it's a little more difficult for him. But Cope just somehow occasionally will find his way to the outside or over the middle where, you know, there's not a safety lurking around, and that's when he picks up those big plays.
Good deal. So, again, for fans who are just joining us here, we have one of the elite Ohio football minds in all of America on right now, Mr. Charlie Hatch from The Post out there in Athens, Ohio, and we can't thank him enough for joining. So, Charlie, let's transition a little bit to the defensive side of the ball. And you and I were talking before the podcast about this Bobcat defense is probably the strength of this team. So what about this Bobcat defense should Minnesota fans keep an eye on when they're watching on Saturday?
I think the biggest thing is if Minnesota tries something, Ohio should be able to adapt pretty quickly. This isn't an Ohio team where, they struggle in the first half and then they go into the locker room and do their halftime adjustments to say, hey, how can we do this? If they start getting burned on one particular, aspect of the game, they'll change it up. So, if Minnesota tries to pound the ball inside, Ohio will stack the box. If they decide they want to go out with maybe a little more aggressive offense with some wide receivers lined up, Ohio has no time adjusting their defense into more of a nickel. So I think from that aspect and the ability for players to play multiple positions, so even if, like Nathan Carpenter, for example, oftentimes he'll play more of a linebacker, an outside linebacking role. But against Marshall, he lined up as a safety. And he had, I know he had a fumble recovery, I think an interception. So these guys, if let's say, Minnesota are trying to pull something quickly, I think Ohio will be able to adapt. It's just about containing Minnesota on big explosive plays. Because if that happens, if they aren't able to do that, I don't know the likelihood of Ohio staying around in the ball game.
Let's talk about some guys that you see on both sides of the ball, offense and defenses, guys that really stand out for Ohio and just names that Gopher fans should become familiar with before Saturday's game.
All right, I think on offense there's a guy named Poppy White. He's a redshirt freshman. I don't want to say he's a Percy Harvin kind of player, but they use him as a utility man. So he'll line up as a running back. He gets a lot of the jet sweep calls. They'll throw it to him. Once he's in open space, that's when he's the most deadly. But he's also a smaller guy. So they'll rotate between him, A.J. Oilette, a small running back who's more of the bruiser. And then Daz Patterson, I don't think he has 200 yards yet, but I know he has at least a touchdown in every single game. So that three-headed running back, the three of them, there's something to watch. Again, they'll rotate throughout. So I don't think, if one stops playing, I don't think Minnesota fans would say, oh, we've taken him out of the game or something like that. On the defensive side of the ball, I think Quentin Poling, one of the linebackers, has been a huge, huge benefit for Ohio because another linebacker, Javon Johnson, has been hurt. Poling, he reads the game well. So if it's the running game, he'll assist. If he doesn't make the tackle himself, he'll make it so it's harder for the offense. And then I think outside, Ian Wells, there were talks last year of him maybe going to the NFL. I don't know how early he would go, but Ian Wells is a corner on the outside. He has shut down most of the receivers he's gone against. Ohio haven't had any receivers that have gone up and, brought in triple digits and yards so far this season.
Good deal, Charlie. Again, last question for Mr. Charlie Hatch here at the Post out there in Athens, Ohio. What are the keys to the game for you if you think Ohio's going to pull out the upset here? And then what is ultimately your prediction for Saturday afternoon's game against the Golden Gophers and why?
I think Ohio needs to have a nice start. That's what they've tried to do throughout a couple games this season. But the problem is the offense a lot of times will start slowing down. So I think in order for them to win this game, if they were able to, they would have to get consistent play from their, from their offense, which, of course, Minnesota held Kent State to three plays on that side of the field. We'll talk to Ohio's quarterback, Garrett Vick, and he just joked around. He's like, Kent State's not a powerhouse on offense, which is true. But, again, I think that's the big aspect because the defense will do their share. They'll try to keep a low-scoring game, but if the offense can't get anything going, it's going to be a long day for Ohio. So I'm going to say Minnesota wins 27-17.
Good deal. I think Minnesota would definitely I think Gopher fans especially would take 27 points after only a 10-point effort last week. So Sounds good. And again, Charlie, we can't thank you enough for joining us here on the Gopher Gridiron podcast. And we'll see if your prediction holds true. So thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about this this game on Saturday. Expectations, obviously, going into this season were heightened, coming off back-to-back 8-5 seasons. Now you basically play. You're 2-1. You know, you get wins against Colorado State in a closer than probably would be imagined 10-7 win over Kent State. So right now, I think the demeanor of the fan base is a little bit down. You know, with expectations heightened, it's a little hard to really quantify what's going on in terms of the offense, because this is kind of similar to what we saw last year. They kind of got out to a little bit of a slower start on offense. But obviously they need to start kind of gelling and putting some continuity together if they're going to win some ball games, Ryan, going into this tougher stretch of their schedule into the Big Ten play.
They're going to need to. Absolutely. I think the key, one of the keys for this offense on Saturday is they're going to have to simplify things. Nikhil and Linebreaker both talked about a Tuesday press conference, is they need to simplify both the schemes here on the offense and just for specific guys. I think, you know, I was talking with one of the guys, with one of the people I know, and they said that Minnesota's offensive line scheme is probably one of the most complex, just in terms of different techniques and blocks and who's supposed to go where. And so I think if Limegrover, you know, in talking with his guys on Sunday and Monday, I wonder if that was one of the things that was put across to him was, hey, can we simplify things, as, you know, it might be a little bit too much for some of these guys. And that's definitely not a bad thing. I think this offensive line, this is a huge game for them. I mean, if they can build even some kind of momentum getting into the Big Ten opener against Northwestern next weekend, it's going to be huge, especially with how stingy that this Northwestern defense is. They need to get some confidence going. And Kills talked about that, how, you know, if you keep hearing how bad you are,
yep,
it's just going to reiterate in your mind. And especially if they go out in these first two series on Saturday and they don't have success, and especially if the crowd starts to boo this offense even more, please don't. I understand that you may be displeased with this offense, but give them a chance here in the first half to try to get some things going. Like, again, it's your money. You spend it the way you want to, and if you want to boo them, that's fine. But at least wait till the second half if you're going to do it. That's my only thing that I'm saying is I want this offense to. Again, they've heard for, you know, pretty much this entire season on how bad they are. And this coaching staff is trying to build them up. So, especially on the offensive line, they're trying to do some different things. They're going to have plugging in more different people, like Tyler Moore and maybe even some other guys. So, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But this offense, man, they need to get going. And another expectation I probably have for Saturday is, I bet Demicroft plays. I just think it's going to happen. Again, I said this before the game last week. If the game script would have allowed it, Demry was going to play.
Yeah.
Demry would have burned his redshirt last week if it was like 27-10 in the fourth quarter. They would have taken Liner out, and Demry would have been the guy. Now, I don't have any reason to believe that that's changed. So if Minnesota gets a lead, or if Liner struggles, like significantly struggles, I think that Kill and Limegrover and this entire offensive staff says we need to do something different here, and they give Croft a series or two and see what he can do. You know, a lot of people think I'm just a huge Leitner homer, and I'm not. Again, it's funny how if you don't bash a guy that people think you're in love with him, but I still think Leitner is the best, gives Minnesota the best chance to win football games this season. And until Croft, you know, as I say this, Croft's going to come in and, you know, absolutely torch the Bobcat defense, and people are going to be pointing at me, I told you so. Well, I hope so it happens. I hope it happens. I just don't see it. He is the most natural quarterback talent on the roster. I've gone on in lengths about that. But, again, he's a guy who's only played quarterback for a few years, mm-hmm. and he came in the summer. I mean, he's only been learning the playbook here for 7 weeks, 8 weeks, maybe. And so if you thought this vanilla, you know, this offense was vanilla with Leinart, be ready for an extremely vanilla offense with Demery, just because the playbook isn't that big with a true freshman quarterback. That's true anywhere around. So the two things I'm expecting from this offense, I'm expecting this offensive line to come out with a fire, you know, lit under their tush. So I think that they're going to be playing angry, and I hope they are. And I think they can try to get the running game going. You have Brandon Lingan coming back. That's a big key. You know, get Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks going. Another thing we didn't talk about that I just want to go off on a quick tangent here is Kill said today on KFan that Shannon Brooks is going to be getting more reps than Roderick Williams now.
Yeah.
That is very, very interesting. That's something I didn't see coming. I know Shannon is talented, but, you know, Kill going with the true freshman running back over the senior, again, I just think it proves to everyone that he's going to play the best players regardless of, you know, whether you're a true freshman or redshirt senior. So it's definitely interesting. So you have the, you know, the quick speed game with Rodney Smith, and then you have the, you know, the more the rough and tumble type of physical play that Shannon brings. Fans who saw him in the scrimmage there at Concordia know that the kid has no issue running through tackles and going into physical different kind of situations. He will meet you in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with somebody that told me that, you know, they asked Shannon, said, "Hey, Shannon, would you rather juke a guy or would you rather run over him?" And he looked him, easy, quick response, "I'd rather run over him and run him into the ground." So for those worried about we're going to lose that physical game of Roderick Williams, you're gaining that in Shannon Brooks. So, again, the two things I'm expecting, the offensive line gets something going, and then don't be surprised if Demery plays.
Right. Okay, in terms of, just to kind of close out on the offense, in terms of what we've seen thus far, you know, a lot of people want to point the fingers at Leinart and they want to focus primarily on the passing game. We've talked about part of that is to do kind of with the state of where football is right now. It's a pass happy, you know, short throws, complete a lot of balls, you know, high completion percentage. So it's easy to point those fingers there because you're seeing a lot of that success elsewhere. But the real issue has been running the football with this team. You know, they haven't been able to solidify a real identity in kind of handle the line of scrimmage like they were able to do sometimes, you know, as the year went on last year. So that's really, you're right, we need to see them make an improvement there before we can really expect them to go play action and make some big completions with this offense.
Yeah, I agree with that for the most part. This isn't new to anybody. I'm basically spewing all information. For this Jerry Kill offense to get going, they need to establish the run.
Yep.
And they couldn't establish the run last week, so this offense couldn't do anything. It is what it is. I mean, they don't have the personnel at quarterback or at receiver or tight end to really go air raid Texas Tech, you know, Mike Leach. So for this offense to take a step forward this week, they have to get something established in the run game.
Yep.
They can't average less than 2.5 yards per carry on 44 carries. It just can't happen. Could they win a ball game like that? Yes, because they proved that they could do it last week. But, I mean, for the play-action game, I don't necessarily agree with that because they showed it last week that they can do it. I mean, on the Leinart interception to Rashad Steele, he got separation on the outside, but Leinart just underthrew it by, you know, 10, 12 yards. If Leinart throws that to the pylon, I got no doubts that Rashad Steele at 6'6" and, you know, goes up over the defensive back, makes a play, touchdown. So if they do go play action, Leinart has to, he's got to complete the deep ball. I mean, it's astounding to me, Luke, because the deep ball has traditionally been Mitch Leinart's best throw. And he underthrew both throws last week. And it's different. I mean, you and I have talked about this, how if Leinart usually misses, it's deep.
Yeah, he doesn't miss short very often.
No, and so I hope that, again, if you're going to miss, obviously, as most quarterbacks know, you miss deep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give the defensive back a place to make a play on it, and trust that, you know, that if you're going to throw a deep drop shot still, he's 6'6". Put it in a place where he can go make a play. So
yeah, I guess my point in terms of the play action has more to do with the fact that I'm not seeing most receivers getting a lot of good separation, and Maybe I'm wrong with that. I don't think that I am. I think that it's frustrating to watch. You know, the guy that probably gets some of the best separation is Wozniak, and that's usually a result of the fact that it's play action, right? And he's blocking more often than not. So I just think that they need to be able to solidify that run game before they can really catch people off guard. You know, it's my opinion. I don't know that I'm right. I'm going to pay closer attention, particularly in this Ohio game. But I do think that's crucial for this offense.
It is. I think for the most part, you are pretty spot on there. I mean, outside of a few plays from a few guys, separation from these wide receivers, as it was last year, is an issue.
And that's partly I'm gonna be straightforward with you. That's partly because a lot of them are young. I know you have a KJ May that's got quite a bit of experience, but for the most part, Eric Carter's really green. We have seen Wolitarski. He's looked better at times, but you know, he's been so injured so often. I mean, it's a lot of young skill position players.
It is, and again, it's not an excuse, but it is what it is. I mean, look at the wide receiver position. You have KJ May, Drew Wolitarski, Eric Carter, and then a bunch of freshmen. Mm-hmm. Again, I've been hyping up these freshmen since they got on campus. Is they're the most athletic group that Minnesota's had in a long time. But that being said, they're about to be playing in some of them, you know, their first, second, or third or fourth collegiate games.
Yep.
They're not experienced, and they don't know how to win against college defensive backs yet. And they won't until they continue to go against them. So
yeah, definitely.
The only wish I have for you, Luke, on Saturday is that can we get the Eric Carter fade out of the playbook? Can we replace it with the Rashad Still or the Melvin Holland or the Isaiah Gentry fade?
Yeah.
That's me being a fan, you know. But usually more times than not, 6'3" to 6'6" wins against a 5'10" corner, not a 5'10" receiver.
Yeah, well,
so that's just me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Steve Smiths of the world would beg to differ, but yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. You know, it definitely makes some sense. Okay, let's talk a tiny bit about this defense. They really don't need, we don't need to talk about them much. They've been absolutely outstanding. Interested to see how they go against Ohio. Sounds like Ohio's offense isn't as high powered as some of the ones they'll obviously see in the Big Ten, but you know, given some of the scores, it sounds like, you know, they're getting off to fast starts, but they're not maintaining that efficiency throughout the game.
Yeah, and for this Ohio, I mean, I'm getting to kind of the point where I don't care what they have on offense going against this Gopher defense. I trust if Tracy Clays gets adequate game film prep in, he's going to come out with a game plan that absolutely just shuts down this team. Against TCU, he really didn't know what to expect. First game of the year, you know, Gary Patterson and Jerry Kill have a long history together. Mike, and then at the Colorado State game, Mike Bobo, new offense coming from Georgia. They really didn't show anything on tape going against an awful FCS team. So first drive of the game, they come down, run some different things, they score. What happens the rest of the game? Tracy Clay sees that, adjusts, and they get shut down. Okay. Kent State comes in. They have two games of prior film. Tracy Clay says, okay, finally. And what does this Gopher defense do? 142 yards total, and they only have three plays across the 50. So Ohio comes in 3-0. They played a quality opponent in Marshall. Southeast Louisiana and Idaho, not so much. But, again, Tracy's got three games to look at. What do they do? What do they do well? What don't they do well? How can we exploit them? That's basically what football is in general. So I'm not too worried about what they have. I mean, that's just me being biased. But again, this is one of the top two or three defenses in the Big Ten and one of the top probably 15 in America.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, it is.
Definitely.
It is. And it is, I can understand. I hear the frustrations every day, you know. Can you imagine what an offense would look like with this Gopher defense? You don't think that goes through my mind? It is what it is. You accept what you have and you move on. But so, again, I wouldn't be surprised if this is just another game like Kent State where it's just a slugfest, like it's just a 13-3 win or a 17-7 game, you know. But I shouldn't be getting ahead of myself. Why don't we transition to the prediction part here, Luke? So what do you think is the final game score for the Gophers versus Ohio come 5:45 Saturday evening?
I think that this game, I think it's going to boil down to if the offense can make plays, and that's kind of obvious, right? I'm going to take the obvious way out. I'm going to take a score of – I'm going to have some confidence in this offense that they're going to be able to put some points on the board. I'm also kind of assuming that we're going to finally see a special teams or defensive score, and we're going to see a 27-14 game.
I think every fan who just heard 27 points from a Minnesota team right now sounds pretty good.
Granted, I have the asterisk that was defensive or special teams touchdown, right? So there is going to be that, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you look back at the games. You had Devondre Campbell against TCU drop one, who had right in the midst. It would have been him versus Trayvon Boykin, 90 yards. You had Jonathan Celestine hit one right in the hands last week. So, and then you had Craig James against Colorado State. If he didn't put up the fair catch signal and run, would have had one. So I think you have a pretty good shot there. I think Minnesota's overdue there. But, I mean, I want to believe in this Gopher offense, putting up, you know, what Jerry Kill wants, which is, I believe it's 31 points a game or 400 yards of total offense. It's just this offensive line is so decimated that it's so tough for me to try to predict anything near that. I'll tell you this, though. I'm predicting 24-6 Minnesota gets the win. I just think Lime Grover, this first series from the Gopher offense, is going to be pulling out some stops, knowing that this offense needs confidence. And so I wouldn't be surprised at, you know, the trick play or two to try to get the momentum going and shifting towards the Gophers there early on. But I just think that there's just so much talent from this team that I just can't see them. Again, says the same guy who didn't predict 10 points. But, again, I think it's probably going to be 24-6. I think Kent State gets two field goals, Minnesota. And if it's 24-6, for all you people who tell me that Demery Croft is basically the next coming of Teddy Bridgewater, you're going to get to see him if that's the game score, because if it's 24-6 in the fourth quarter, it's Demery time. So we'll see. I mean, it should be a good game on Saturday, and then we'll have Derek Burns joining us again next week to hopefully break down the Gophers' third win of the season. So
yeah, it looks like a beautiful day come Saturday.
It does.
Yeah, about 75 degrees at kickoff, and, you know, right about game end, you know, right around 70, 71. So it's going to be a beautiful day, and it's nice to have that late game start so that people can enjoy some tailgating and some pregame festivities.
Yeah, especially on homecoming weekend here. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it should be 76 and sunny at 2:30 when the game kicks off there. It's homecoming. From what I've heard, it should be close to another sellout again. There's over 51,000 tickets that have been distributed already. So if you're thinking about going to the game and you're trying to convince the wife, how can I get her to go? I would say two things. I would say it's 2:30 and it's going to be 75 degrees and sunny. What else are you going to do on the last weekend of September, knowing that October is around the corner and it could get cold at any point?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is it's homecoming. So, again, there's going to be a ton of spirit going around the campus. You can go down, you know, Frat Row there, get to see the different kinds of I should know this. I literally just graduated from Minnesota 4 months ago. They have the different stands of Goldie.
The paper mache.
Paper mache. I could not think of the word for
the life of me. Or tissue paper thing, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So take a walk down Frat Row. Right off of university there. If you get there a little bit early, just to see what the different fraternities have done there, there's usually some good ones. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. You know, you can get the kids to grandma or grandpa's or bring them with. Again, there's going to be a lot of spirit. I can guarantee this Gopher team is going to be riled up and should be a good day. So, again, we'll have Derek Burns on next week. For Luke and I, we can't thank you enough for listening, and then go Gophers.